Good morning, good afternoon, maybe it's good evening for you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Bienvenidos, bienvenidos. Buenos días, buenas tardes, buenas noches a todos. Thank you for being in our Introduction to Investments, Spring 2004 Business 123 class. We are very grateful, very honored, happy that you are with us. My name is Frank Paiano, and you can call me Frank or Paco or Mr. Paiano. And I am your instructor for this class. And this is, folks, the best class on campus. I'm not biased, of course. We are going to start from the very beginning. So if you have any worries about, I don't know, I've never done any invest, don't worry about it, relax. We start from the very beginning. But first, before we even get started, we want to take a look at a perspective on slide number 2. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos, drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Did you just read this yesterday in the news? Did you watch Skunk News last night? I'm sorry, Weasel News. Fox News, of course. Talking about the end of civilization as we know it and the destruction of the American way of life. If you ask people when this was written, when this quote was said, they might say 1930s depression, 1940s World War II. No, they're a little bit off. It was actually 1847 when the nation really was in a gloomy moment in history. It was about ready to tear itself apart in the Civil War. Did they have serious problems in 1847? Yes. Do we have serious problems now? Yes. But equating serious with fatal has usually been wrong. We are going to emphasize the good things that can happen. That doesn't mean we're not going to look at the serious problems. There are serious problems. There are always serious problems. But it turns out if you look at history and look at the future with a positive view, you're not only happier and healthier, but also financially better off if you look at it from a positive point of view. There are pessimists who can make money, folks, will learn how to do it, but it's not easy. It's a lot harder than just believing that we'll fix the problems. We'll create new problems and we'll fix them. And if it does all fall down into nothing, it doesn't really matter, does it? Well, that's a real gloomy thought, isn't it? But as we're going to say over and over again throughout the semester, there are no guarantees when it comes to investing. Every investment has risks involved with it. Every investment has advantages, disadvantages. So let's get started on slide number 3. A brief history of risk and return. Now, this is chapter 1 in your book. As I said in the syllabus, I don't really mind if you have books 4, edition 4, edition 5, or edition 6. They're all basically the same. There are a couple of books in the library on reserve. You can't check them out, but you can read them there. And the first chapter is actually very, very good, so I like that. But what I would have done if I would have written the book is I would have also included a overview of security types. Now, they do that in chapter 3, but they get into far too much detail, as I will again and again remind you as you're going through these presentations. And they also don't really discuss time horizon and short-term investments in detail. They talk about it, but not as much as I'd like to emphasize it. So here, as it says on slide number 3, what I've tried to do is create what I believe should be the contents of the first chapter of an Introduction to Investments textbook. Okay? And we'll discuss this as we go on, what you should emphasize, what you should not emphasize. As I said, the book goes into far too much detail in Chapter 3 on security types and doesn't really discuss short-term investments in detail. So those are the things you really need to know. Follow the presentation. Let's start our idea, our thought process when it comes to investing with a tremendous quote from J. Kenfield Morley. In investing money, the amount of interest you want should depend upon whether you want to eat well or sleep well. He says it all right there. Now, I wouldn't have used the word interest. See, folks, I would have used the word reward or maybe the word return, because not all investments pay interest. Some pay dividends, some pay rent, others are capital gains only, so that's you just get an increase in value. So he was more talking about what we'll see is bonds and other types of interest paying investments. But he says it all. Do you want to eat well? Well, if you do, you're going to have to take some risk. Do you want to sleep well? Yes, but that means you're going to have to find investments that are not as risky. So there's a tremendous tug of war that we are going to describe and discuss in detail. And whenever we take a look at investments, we're going to have to discuss this risk versus return idea, risk versus reward, over and over and over again. So let's get started. Slide number 2. What is an investment? See, I told you we started from the very beginning, right? We start with the question, a very simple question. What is an investment? Because you think you know what an investment is, and some people will show you things that they think they know are investments, but maybe they aren't. Maybe they are. Here's our definition on slide number 4. An investment is any vehicle into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income or that its value will be preserved or increased or both. So we want you to write that down and memorize it, folks. The idea is an investment is going to generate returns for us in the form of income or increased value, maybe decreased value at times, or both. And those returns are called rewards, or investment returns, or investment rewards. And so when you look at an investment, you have to be able to describe, what is this investment going to do for us? Is it going to create income in the form of interest, as Mr. Kenfield was talking about, from a savings account, from a bond? Is it going to create dividends? Well, who pays us dividends? Stocks pay us dividends. How about rent? That comes from real estate. And another name for income is cash flows. What are the cash flows? What's going to flow from this investment in the form of cash? The other type of return is the one that people tend to concentrate on. That's the one that they tend to focus on when they talk about investments. Well, how much is it going to go up? That's the capital gain, the capital appreciation. Yippee! Or the capital loss. Boo! Yeah, right. So this slide you need to burn into the back of your eyelids. Because what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at just the beginnings of the differentiation of all the different types of investments, because they come in all shapes, flavors, and sizes. And so we are just starting from the beginning, folks. Just make sure you understand what are in these presentations. And when you hear a term like stock, or bond, you don't have to understand anything about it other than what we described right here. That is it. So if you're worried about not being able to hack this class, you can do it. There is no doubt. Just don't get too worried. You hear all these people talking on the idiot box, and you're supposed to be as smart as they are. No, not at all. No, no, no. Slide number 5. The different major types of investments are securities. What a silly name. In fact, this class used to be called Investments and Securities, and people would say, I'm not an administration of justice major. I don't think I should take that class. No, not that type of security. A security is a type of investment that represents debt or ownership. So debt is some money that somebody owes. So the security represents debt. Well, that's called a bond. Don't worry about it, but that's what it's called. Or ownership. That security that you purchased says that you are part owner. Well, that's a stock. That's what a stock is. Or the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership interest. Later. We'll discuss those later on. They're a little bit more trickier. But when you buy a security, you're essentially buying a financial investment. That's probably the better term that people should use, because people get all caught on the term security. It's just saying that this piece of paper, well, it's not even paper anymore, right? It's all electronic, represents money that is owed to me or a piece of something that I own. Or the ability to go out and buy a debt or buy an ownership. That's where it gets tricky, and we'll discuss those later on. And then the other major type of investment is property. Real property. What a silly name, as opposed to imaginary. No, real means it's attached to the ground. That's why you hear real estate, land, buildings. Personal property, such as gold, precious metals, automobiles. People invest in automobiles. It's not easy to do, but it can be done. Art, collectibles. They're sometimes called hard assets or tangible assets. And then we'll discuss commodities, which are really items that people use and buy and need. And we will discuss these later on, in the end of the semester, the property, real estate. Because real estate is a course unto itself. It really is. And then commodities and the collectibles, and like they're for most of us, you know, we're not going to get involved in these things. And we'll discuss this way at the end of the semester. We're going to concentrate on securities. And then the third type of investment, which is often the best investment a person will ever make, is an investment in yourself. Education, training, travel. Why is that? Well, it's not always a guarantee, but the more education you have, often the more income you're going to generate. So if you think of yourself as an investment, right, you're going to be throwing off cash. You're going to be creating a cash flow, an income from wages later on in life. And so if you invest in yourself, you should not necessarily, and that's not the only reason we educate ourselves, folks. We tend to concentrate on the money aspect, but we also want to be good citizens and strong citizens, because that makes the country and the neighborhood and the state and the city stronger. It's because it's a collection of citizens, right? Slide number 6. Now we're going to start getting a little more concentrated, a little bit more differentiated as we learn more and more about individual assets and investments. So slide number 6, we break down investments into whether they are primary assets or derivative assets. Now, we're going to discuss derivatives way at the end of the semester, folks. So all you have to know is what's in this presentation for now. But the two major primary assets are debt, when you lend money or other resources to somebody, or equities, where you are the owner or a part owner. So debt is an asset where you lend money, lend funds in exchange for interest, and the promised repayment of the loan at a given future date. So the major form of investments in debt are bonds, and we'll discuss bonds in detail about halfway near the end, near the middle of the semester, a little bit past the middle of the semester. Short-term investments, such as savings accounts, you are actually lending your money to the bank, and they are paying you interest. Well, right now they're not paying you hardly anything, and they promise to repay the money back when you say, "Hey, I need my money." They say, "Okay, here it is." And then the other type of primary asset is equity, where you are owner or part owner in a business or a property. And the major form of asset that we're going to take a look at this semester is stocks. Stocks are part ownership of a corporation. But there are other ways you can own businesses: partnerships, sole proprietorships. And if you take Business 120, Introduction to Business, you're going to learn about these different business structures. Real estate is an equity position. We buy a property and it throws off rent, cash flow rent, and hopefully it'll go up in value over the years. And then real estate investment trusts. What are these things? Well, they're little odd ducks. They look like stocks, but they're actually real estate, and we'll discuss those much later on. Now, this other form of asset is called a derivative. This guy is what can get you in a lot of trouble. And you will hear people say, "Ooh, you're going to make tons of money every day," and your next day you're going to lose it all. These are securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? What? Well, security means it's a financial investment. Okay, you understand that, right? It's a financial investment that derives, that gets its value from something else. So it's not the investment, it's pointing to another investment. It gets its value from something else. Now, some people in the industry do not classify these as investments. I'm one of them. I call these speculations, which is that's what the industry calls things that are very risky. They call them speculations, which instead of saying, you know, gambling, which is really what it is, they're gambling. They're saying no. It's speculative, and these things can make you a lot of money very quickly, or you can lose a lot of money very quickly. And that's what normally people do, is they wind up losing a lot of money very quickly, and then they say, "I'll never do that again." Two examples, there are more, but the two examples I want you to remember for this presentation only are options and futures. Options and futures are two major examples of derivative assets. But that's all you have to know. And this is where I take issue with the book. In Chapter 3, they'll spend a lot of time and a lot of ink on options, and I just think it's wrong. It's you know, you don't want to deal with these things until much later on in the semester. We take a look at them at the very end. Okay? Yeah. So let's now go to the next slide. Pressed the wrong button here. Okay, now, investments are also categorized as to whether they are direct investments or indirect investments. Direct investment: your name is on the investment. You control the investment. You can buy and sell whenever you want to. So real estate, stocks, bonds. Indirect investments are investments where somebody else is in control. They are the ones deciding what they're going to invest in. You have limited control, or more likely, no control over the underlying investment. So the major one that we will discuss in this class are mutual funds. Right, mutual funds, you're investing in the mutual fund, and you can sell your shares in the mutual fund, but that entity invests for you. They buy the individual investments that make up the mutual fund, and you don't have any, you can't call them up and say, "I want you to buy the..." Same thing is true for real estate investment trusts, which are kind of like a mutual fund that invests in real estate instead of stocks or bonds, and then limited partnerships. So you understand? A direct investment, you decide what you're going to purchase. You decide what you're going to sell. The indirect investments, they do it for you. Slide number 8. We also categorize investments as to where they are domiciled. Are they domestic investments based inside the United States, or are they international, also known as foreign investments based outside the United States? Now, if a type of investment is global, that means it includes the United States and outside the United States. So you have to be careful. You have to be aware of this subtle distinction. Many people don't see any difference between international, foreign, and global. No, no, no. In the investment world, there is a difference, and you must be aware of this. International, also known as foreign, means outside the United States. Domestic means based inside the United States, and global means total el mundo, right? All the world. So includes the United States and outside the United States. And here's a great quote from a money manager with 40 years of experience. The world is a very small place these days economically. And I got this from Forbes here. 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the U.S. and Canada. 90% of the parts in the Toyota Sienna, which, by the way, is built in Indiana, come from the United States and Canada. So which one's the more American car? How can you get more American than a Ford Mustang? Huh? Buy a Toyota Sienna. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Yes, you can see and find companies that are domestic, but they make more money outside the United States. You ever hear of Coca-Cola? Yeah, right. And it turns out that most of the major companies, most of the big companies in the United States make more money outside the United States than they do inside the United States. And then you can find companies that are based outside the United States that do a sizable, if not a plurality, of their sales inside the United States. And then you can find companies that are based in the United States that don't sell anything in the United States. They sell everything outside the United States. Whew, it's getting kind of crazy. Slide number 9. So let's take a look at all these brand names. Now, you know all these companies, right? Just scanning through, can you determine which ones are the domestic, which ones are the foreign? Well, let's figure. Come on. Which one? Foreign. Of course, Volvo and Saab, right? They're foreign, right? Who else? Who else is foreign? Maybe you might know that Bayer Aspirin is, yeah, but all the other ones look, they're all, well, I don't know what. Let's take a look. Budweiser. Is that foreign or domestic? Mother Bud. It's actually foreign-based. It was bought by a company called InBev, and now they call themselves Anheuser-Busch InBev, but it's no longer based in the United States. It's now based in Belgium and Brazil. Figured that one out. Shell Oil. Well, most people don't know the real name of Shell Oil is Royal Dutch Petroleum. It's an Anglo-Dutch consortium, Royal Dutch Petroleum, Shell Oil. But they own a big chunk of Houston. Ben and Jerry's, right? Ben and Jerry's is foreign. Yeah, they were purchased by a company, the same company that makes Häagen-Dazs, I think. And Farmers Insurance, now they're owned by Zurich Financial Services, which is based in Switzerland. ARCO! PM is owned by BP, British Petroleum. Gerber is owned by Nestle's. And Carnation is owned by Nestle's. And Cup of Soup is owned by, are they owned by Nestle's too? And Fox Network. These are the people who are always flying the American flag. And if you don't believe the way they believe, you're obviously some kind of communist. And they're actually based in Australia. This is bizarre. You know, Fox Network, I lost all respect for them when they said that Fred Rogers, remember Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, was an evil, evil man. I said, that's it. You guys can't, you can't call Mr. Rogers evil. He's a sweet man. And he's dead now. But Seagram's, they're based in Canada. Bayer's based in Germany. Vaseline is based in the UK. Friskies is now owned by, I think, Nestle's. I think they're Purina is now owned by Nestle's. Motel 6 is now owned by a French company, 7-Eleven. Now, here's an interesting story. 7-Eleven was based in Texas, right? Southland Corporation. And they spun off other companies in Mexico and all around the world. And one of the most popular ones was in Japan, 7-Eleven Japan. And Japan, 7-Eleven, is just the place. I mean, it is, I've never been there, but that's my understanding. They got so big that they turned around and bought the 7-Eleven in the United States. And they're actually doing some pretty interesting things with 7-Eleven. I don't know if you've been in one lately, but they're very different. They have their own food brand now. It's very interesting. So they're based in Japan. And so the two companies that you were sure were foreign were Volvo and Saab, and it turns out that they actually for many years were domestic. Huh? Ford owned Volvo for several years, and GM owned Saab, but then they turned around and sold them, and Volvo is now owned by a Chinese company, and Saab is owned by a very small company, I think, in Denmark, is it? I'm not sure. One-tenth the size. And people say, this is terrible, all our companies are big. No, this is good. What do you mean this is good? Because if we create all these interrelationships and the world becomes global, does that mean you want to bomb your customers in other countries? No, it's a very good thing. In my humble opinion, it means we have to get out there and compete, certainly, but it's something that we always wanted. We wanted everybody to be like us, and now when everyone's like us, we go, wait a minute, we don't really want you to be like us. Slide number 10. The world is global, folks, and here we're going to go back over the past 40 years, and these are the top 18 countries according to per capita income. Australia, Austria, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, Singapore, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, UK, and the USA. Now, these are also developed countries. I should say developed countries, because there are some developing countries that have much higher per capita incomes, but they're very small. So which one do you think has the best over the last 40 years? Well, the answer might surprise you. It's Sweden. What? Netherlands? Denmark? Switzerland? How could these countries have better returns than the good old U.S. of A? They have socialized medicine! Well, hey, USA is no slouch at almost 10%, but what's going on? Well, we'll discuss this in detail later on, but take a look at the bottom. Spain, Japan, Italy, what's going on in these countries? Well, it turns out, folks, that these countries are losing people. Not so much that they're losing people, it's just that their populations are shrinking. Their fertility rates are way down. In fact, in Italy, they'll pay you, if you're a woman, we'll pay you to have a baby. And so it's very difficult to grow an economy when your population is dropping. As a whole, the return of the stock markets in the developed world has been about 8.7%, which is not that bad, folks. We'll discuss, you know, what are good rates of return. You get 8, 9, 10%. At least I do. If I get 8, 9, 10%, I'm a very, very happy man. But we're not seeing the whole story. We will revisit this, and we will see that although it looks like Sweden and Netherlands kicked our butts, it's that we're going to see more of the story later on and find out that, you know, we're not slouches, folks. We're in the game, and we're still the biggest economy, and someday we won't be, but that makes sense because there are countries that have four times as many people as we do. China and India. Slide number 11. We now are going to differentiate investments by their time frame. Now, there are general guidelines that are used through the industry. I have a tendency to take a little bit longer time frame, but that's me. Everyone's different. Short-term investments up to a year or so. That's generally what people will say. Now, I've seen others that use mine, one or two. I've even seen one that said 3 years, which I thought is, that's, for some people, it's short-term. It depends. Intermediate term, 2 to 5 years. Long-term, 5 years or more. I like to think of long-term 7, 10, 12, 20, 30 years. And so we say before you make an investment, you must know your time horizon. People will jump up and down and say, hey, should I invest in stocks? I say, well, maybe. When do you need the money? Well, I kind of need it in 6 months. Don't put it in the stock market. The stock market can drop 20% in one day. It's done it in the past. It'll do it in the future. We don't know when. If we knew when, we could make a lot of money. But if you need the money in the short term, there are certain investments that you really should use and others that you should shy away from. We call those short-term investments, and we're going to spend some time on that in this presentation, but the last in this chapter, in the last presentation. And then if you don't need the money for 5, 6, 10, 20 years, retirement, oh boy, you want to take a look at long-term investments such as stocks and mutual funds that are invest in stocks, or real estate, maybe real estate. If you need the money in the intermediate term, well, then you're kind of limited. I want to take a look at maybe bonds, money market, it's still short term. But right now, short term investments are paying very little, and intermediate term aren't paying very much either. So they're kind of skunked in those two worlds. But long term investments, I think there are tremendous long term investments now. But we're going to learn to deal with volatility in a bit, so hang on to your hat. Slide number 12, liquidity. Liquid versus illiquid investments. And this term is, I think, overused. You know, people think, well, does that mean how much wine and beer we have for the weekend? No. It means, can we easily and quickly convert our investments into cash? A liquid investment has a ready market to purchase the investment and change the ownership quickly. And examples of these, and again, you don't have to, have to know everything about these. All you have to know is what's in the presentation. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate investment trusts. These all change ownership quickly. You get your money tomorrow or 3 days, very, very quickly. Now, illiquid investments, it may be difficult to convert into cash. The market for the investment is small, or the change of ownership happens slowly, or both. And the poster child for illiquid investments is real estate. Right. Real estate, it doesn't change hands overnight, folks. It takes weeks, months maybe, or sometimes longer. Partnerships sometimes are very difficult to convert into cash. Collectibles, depends on the collectible, but that might be difficult too. So can you easily and quickly convert your investment into cash? And then our last but not least, in fact the most important characteristic that we need to look at whenever we look at a investment is the risk versus the return. The risk versus return. We're going to spend a lot of time on this, folks. Remember, we're just scratching the surface, and we'll peel away whatever analogy you want to use, peel away the level layers of an onion, or flying over the investment landscape at 50,000 feet. Risk is the chance that actual investment returns will differ from what the expected returns are. In other words, you expect to get 8%, or you expect to get 4%, or 12%. What did you really get? What is the typical definition of risk? If you ask people, they'll say, well, the possibility of suffering harm or loss, danger, right? Well, that's not how we measure risk in the financial world, because it's impossible to measure it effectively. We come up with another way, which we'll discuss in great detail. But in general, the higher the expectation of investment returns, the higher the risk. If somebody comes up to you and says, I have a 12% no risk investment, just, shake your head or smile or whatever, or go, because, they're lying. It doesn't exist. If you want low risk, you're going to get low returns. And I'm using my guidelines. The book has, they use higher amounts than other people, but low risk is 3 to 5% over the long term. Right now, it's even lower. Moderate risk 4, 5, 7, 8%. Right now, it's even lower. High risk 8 to 12. I like to tell people 8, 9, 10, and anything greater than 12%, folks, is speculative, highly speculative. And sure, you can get 50%, 100% overnight with an option or a derivative, it's called. And then lose it all the next day. Yeah, that's not investing, folks. That's gambling. Now, you're going to hear from other investors, other speculators, other traders who say, nah, Payano doesn't know what he's doing, talking about. He's an old fuddy-duddy. And you know what? That's their reality. That's their world. And I'm not trying to denigrate it. I'm not trying to disparage it. But sure, you can get 50, 100% overnight, but then the next day you could lose it all. Does that fit our definition of investing? I don't think so. If you go back to the very first slide where we said, what is an investment? We said an investment is any vehicle that we put resources in where we have a reasonable expectation of future cash flows, rent, dividends, income from investments, from interest, or it's going to hold its value or increase its value reasonably, or both. And when you have an investment that has a reasonable expectation of becoming worthless, that's not an investment. But remember, I'm telling you my biases right up front, and you're going to hear differently from other people. And you have to decide, where you come down on this risk versus return spectrum. And the last thing I want you to do is believe that you have to do what I say. I mean, that's so off the mark. And what I'm going to try to do is get some people who have more higher risk tolerances to interview them and ask them, what they believe in terms of what kind of return they're going to try to get. Okay, great. So now, let us conclude our first presentation with some examples, slide number 14. Now that you have these aspects, these attributes, these characteristics, and you need to study them, folks, I'm not going to kid you, you've got to do some study in this class. What type of investment is a Bank of America passbook savings account? Huh? Passbook savings, I don't even call them passbook savings accounts, but some people tell me they still get these passbooks that look like a passport. That's why they're called passbooks. And then the bank stamps them, or the credit union stamps them. So is it security or is it a property? A security or property? Well, a property is something that's a hard asset, such as real estate or commodities. Something that's like wheat or corn, or baseball cards or cars. No. This is a security. It's a savings account. You are lending your money to Bank of America, and they are promising to do what? They're promising to pay you interest and pay back that money when you need it. So is it debt or is it equity? It is debt. You are lending your money. Is it direct or indirect? Well, your name is on the account, so it is a direct investment. Is it domestic or foreign? Yeah, Bank of America is based. Where is it based, by the way? People think it's based in San Francisco. No. The old Bank of America, which I think used to be the Bank of Italy first before it was Bank of America, figured that one out. But that was based in San Francisco. But now it was bought by a company called Nations Bank, which I think is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah. So it's domestic. Is it short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, we're going to find out in our upcoming presentations, when we discuss these in more detail, is that savings accounts are considered short term. Now, some people put money in there for the long term because they haven't taken Business 123 and they haven't learned about the opportunity costs of keeping your money in a bank when you don't need the money for a long time. because they're terrified of the stock market and they don't understand bonds. But no, savings accounts are short term. This is where you need money. This is where you put money when you need it in 6 months, a year. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Folks, it's very low risk. Is your money safe in the bank? Yes. I don't care what anybody says. The United States government isn't falling apart anytime soon, although it kind of looks like it, but it's not. And so this is very low risk. It's insured by the U.S. federal government. Is it liquid or illiquid? It's very liquid. You go into the bank and say, I want my money, and they'll give it to you that day. Or they might say, you know what, if you want it in cash, you got to come back the next day. And they'll also call the FBI and say, this person wants $12,000 in cash. That's a suspicious transaction. He might be a terrorist or a drug dealer or a politician. Anyway, Nestle's Foods, Nestle, N-E-S-T-L-E, you don't remember that, you millennials. They are the world's largest food company. Yes, they are. And is it a security or property? It's a security. It's a stock. You are buying part ownership when you buy stock in Nestle's Foods. Is it debt or equity? Well, a stock is part ownership, which is another word for equity. Yeah, you're owning a piece of the company. Is it direct or indirect? It's direct because you have the name on the account and you can sell your shares at any time. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, Nestle is actually based in Switzerland, and even though it's based in Switzerland, they do very little of their percentage of their business in Switzerland. Switzerland's a fairly small country. They are a company which is basically a country of all its own. They are global, and they are all over the world. So they are global, but we would call them a foreign or international. Yeah, a short term, intermediate term, or long term. Well, as we're going to learn, stocks normally are considered long term investments. With a company like Nestle, yeah, you could consider them intermediate term, 3 to 5 years. But we don't want to consider stocks short term because the stock market as a whole, as we've seen, it can drop very quickly. So if you need the money in 6 months, don't put it into stocks, even if it's a stock like Nestle. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Again, stocks are normally considered high risk, but a company like Nestle, we could put in the moderate range, yeah, because they're not going anywhere. And then is it liquid or illiquid? Well, in general, as we'll see, stocks are very liquid in that somebody will buy your shares of IBM or McDonald's or Coca-Cola or Nestle. Now, what about Southwestern Community College Propositions AA and ARBA? What are these things? What are you talking about? Well, you probably see these signs around campus or maybe on the website saying, thank you, voters of the South Bay. We're Southwestern College. We're a municipal entity. We're a community college district. And as such, we can issue bonds, which is a fancy way of saying we can make a loan. And so after 40, 50 years, the campus started to look a little peaked and needed some upgrading. And so we were authorized by the voters of the South Bay, the voters of the Southwestern Community College District, to sell bonds, to make loans, to prop up the campus, to fix up the campus. And we're, you know, I don't know if you've seen the new stadium. I don't know, folks. I don't want to get on this, but I think we're spending a little too much money on that stadium. But anyway, it's not my decision. And so we have created these bonds and sold them to the world at large. Now, are they a security or a property? They are a security. They represent debt. So they're not equity, they're debt. You don't own a piece of Southwestern College. You lend your money to Southwestern College, and in return, they're going to pay, we, our college, is going to pay you interest and eventually pay the debt back. Is it direct or indirect? Well, if you own the bonds, it's direct. Your name is on the account. You can sell the bonds at any time. Is it domestic? Well, some people call us Tijuana Tech, but that's not very fair because there is a Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana in Tijuana. So that's not a very good name to call us. We are domestic. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Well, it turns out that bonds can make a very good intermediate. Normally, an intermediate term investment. They can also be long term for some investors. Some investors buy bonds for the long term. And there is a way that we will discuss when we get to bonds for bonds to be short term. But these things, I would call them intermediate to long term. Low, moderate, or high risk? Would you consider Southwestern College to be a low, moderate, or high risk? Well, it's certainly not a high risk. Is it a low risk? Well, in general, it would be considered low risk. But right now, bonds, in my humble opinion, are on the bit on the riskier side than normal because of interest rates. And we'll discuss those in detail much later on. Are they liquid? Are they illiquid? They're very liquid. Somebody is going to come along and buy your Southwestern Community College bonds because they're going to pay. You're going to get your interest. You're going to get your principal back. Nobody's going to say, I don't want to buy those bonds. I don't want to buy those bonds. How about a duplex in Spring Valley? You rent one and you live in the other? That's property, right? That's real estate. And that is equity because you own it. Is it direct or indirect? Well, your name is on the title down at the county courthouse, count at the county admin building. Is it domestic or, Spring Valley is still domestic, yes. Short-term, intermediate-term, or low? Oh, yes. Real estate, I don't care what happened in 2004, 5, and 6. Real estate should be considered a long-term investment. And people were buying real estate and flipping it in 6 months, 9 months, a year. We knew it couldn't last, and of course it didn't. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, in general, real estate should be considered moderate to high risk. But over the long term, it turns out that real estate's been a very good investment for long-term investors. But in the short term, it can be very risky, especially if you lose a job or you have one renter who causes you tens of thousands of dollars of damage. Yeah, so there's some risk involved in real estate, folks. Is it liquid or illiquid? Ah, yes. This is where we are met with the bugaboo of real estate. Real estate is illiquid. Normally, during the housing bubble, you put out a sign on Thursday evening and for sale, and by Saturday you got 5 offers. But that's not usual. Usually it takes 60 days, 90 days, maybe longer to sell a piece of property. What about Qualcomm? And by the way, it's supposed to be all uppercase. Qualcomm, what is it? It's a stadium. No. That's a company. It's a security. It's a stock. It's equity. We own the stock. Is it direct or indirect? If it's in our brokerage account, our name's on the title, it's direct. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, it's based here in San Diego, so it's domestic, but wait a minute. They make most of their money outside the United States. So, it's domestic, but it's one of those situations where they make more money outside the United States than they do inside the United States. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Stocks should be considered long term, even though Qualcomm has been a very good investment for long term investors. It's very volatile, so you don't want to buy it if you're going to need the money in 4 months or a year. Low, moderate, or high risk? Well, in general, stocks are considered high risk because of the volatility. There's that silly word that we're going to use over and over again later on. But as long as you hold on for the long term, well, there's no guarantees because the technology area really does change quickly. But no, Qualcomm's pretty well entrenched in the telecommunications world. But if the telecommunications world were all of a sudden to be upended by some new technology, Qualcomm would be scrambling and so would investors. Is it liquid or illiquid? It's very liquid. Somebody wants to buy your 100 shares or your 50 shares of Qualcomm. All right, our last example, a loan to Uncle Harry. Every family has an Uncle Harry, Tio Lucas. Yeah, I'm right. Is security or property? Well, it's a loan, so it's a security and it's debt. Yeah, you loaned it to him. He's supposed to be paying the interest and supposed to be paying the principal back, but where is he? I don't know. Direct or indirect? Yeah, you got it. It's yours. Domestic or foreign? Well, he was in San Diego last time we checked, but who knows? Maybe he's in Tierra del Fuego now. Short term, intermediate, long term. Maybe infinity. Will we get our low, moderate, or high? Every family has an Uncle Harry. So yes, it's an investment. Well, is it? reasonable expectation of cash flows in the form of interest, having your money paid back, yeah, liquid or illiquid, nobody's going to buy your debt. No, no. You're the one who... I hope you considered that humorous. I mean, because every family has, right? Every, yeah. Okay, so now, what are you going to do? You're going to go back over this and make sure you have those characteristics down. And all, as I said, you have to understand is what's in this presentation. Please, do read the book. Do read Chapter 1. Go through Chapter 3. If you get confused, put it down and come back to it later. But in our next presentation, we will basically go through Chapter 3. We will take a look at an overview of investment types. In this presentation, we focused more on characteristics of investments. In the next presentation, we're going to discuss the details, in more detail, the investment types. So, are you excited, folks? I hope so. Thank you again for being in our class. Study hard. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College. And we're going to teach you how to make some money. So, stick with us. See you in our next presentation.